racing into New York, the 2009 Auto Show.
So the auto companies really have to do everything they can to try to attract buyers.
And this year, the buyers they want most...
Oh, that's very convenient.
...are Ryan Bradbury and Anthony Vallone.
What do you think?
With the mainstream standing still, they, like many gays and lesbians, are on the move.
I think we still are just as likely to buy a new car.
I don't know if you have any idea how many phone calls and how many menu trees it takes to stay on Medi-Cal.
In 1991, the Wall Street Journal declared the gay community a dream market. Soon, gay publications and anti-gay activists alike were abuzz with the news. Gay men and lesbians were far wealthier than their straight counterparts and had fabulous amounts of disposable income to throw around.
Gay getaways, just show me where to play on. Gay getaways, I'm feeling oh so gay. Please.
20 years later, these ideas about class in the gay and lesbian communities are firmly rooted in American culture. They've brought us television shows like Will and Grace and The L Word.
Yeah, I was wondering if you had anything in the lower price ranges.
Oh, what range did you have in mind?
25. Today.
Excuse me?
Oh, she's kidding.
Hello.
It's so expensive. Adele, really, we're making a film about fashionable lesbians.
In a 1996 Supreme Court opinion, Justice Antonin Scalia wrote,
"Of course, it is our moral heritage that one should not hate any human beings or class of human beings. But I had thought that one could consider certain conduct reprehensible, murder, for example, or polygamy or cruelty to animals. The problem is that because those who engage in homosexual conduct tend to reside in certain communities, have high disposable income, and of course care about homosexual rights issues much more ardently than the public at large, they possess political power much greater than their numbers, both locally and statewide."
Yet even one of the people most responsible for creating the affluent image of the gay community will tell you that it's a myth.
My name's Todd Evans. I'm 46 years old. I'm born and bred in New Jersey. Both my parents were professional ice skaters.
Todd Evans is president and CEO of Rivendell Media, which in 1984 was called Rivendell Marketing.
I own a company called Rivendell Media. It was founded by a man named Joe DeSabato in 1979. And he was the first promoter of Elton John and Jefferson Airplane at the time. In fact, Elton John's first album, the U.S. version, is dedicated to him. He pitched the market at that time as double income, no kids, urban dwelling, and so forth. And everyone would say, that's great, but you know, I got to cover my tail in this. What are the facts on that? And so in 1984, he went to the major publications across the country and asked them if they could participate in a reliable research project. And at the time, the most reliable company was Simmons Market Research Bureau. The price tag was quite steep. I believe it was over $100,000 in 1984. They promptly formed a group called the National Gay Newspaper Guild, and everyone ponied up 10 grand and did the first reader survey of the top gay publications in the United States. And that survey is kind of the original hallmark survey that showed the gay and lesbian readers of these papers as being affluent and single, a lot higher than the average American. Now, of course, in the hoopla that followed, every gay person and gay publication kind of took those numbers and hyped them as their own, and that's where sort of the myth of the gay affluence came from.
Hey! I made it myself. It's a dry snack mix. I call it garlic jazz! I think you might like it, but if you don't, blame it on the bossa nova.
Boy, knock it off. Don't make me laugh. You're bugging me.
Okay, how am I bugging you?
How about projectile garlic jazz all over my $4,000 sofa?
Each time you describe the sofa, you add another $1,000.
It's always been a battle for us because on the one hand, hey, that's great for advertisers, and you would kind of want to say that that's the truth. But we always just stuck to the facts, and the facts were that that survey was representative of those top 10 papers in the U.S.
Of course, it was also embraced by some very virulent anti-gay campaigners, the people who promoted the Colorado Anti-Gay Initiative, Justice Scalia, the people who made the film The Gay Agenda. How did you feel when you started to hear that?
You know, knowing them as intimately as I do, I just knew that they were wrong. They were making assumptions. No one would ever think to take the reader survey of Newsweek magazine and say all Americans have this demographic. You know, the ones that were using them for discrimination, you know, where does income or have anything to do with being discriminated against? It was really a bizarre leap to make that being wealthy meant you didn't need any protection. Even if that was true. And when we're saying higher than the average American, we're just saying higher than the average American. We're not talking wealthy by any means.
For many working class and poor gay men and lesbians, hearing the news of gay wealth repeated over and over added insult to injury.
At the time, I actually couldn't afford to buy the newspaper where that was published.
In 1991, Daniel Ward had just been kicked out of the Navy and moved to the gay Mecca, San Francisco.
I was born in the Central Valley, a city called Stockton. My mother raised my two brothers and I by herself. She worked for most of her working life at AT&T, and she was an operator and a clerk. And I spent my entire life moving from one place to another because my mother was constantly getting evicted because she couldn't afford the rent. When I got thrown out of the Navy, I moved to San Francisco, found roommates and found a job, found several jobs, got laid off from several jobs, and I'm a landscape maintenance gardener. I'm either one half of a two-person incorporation or I'm one half of an anarchist collective. Depends, I guess, who I'm talking to.
Jen Cuvillon runs a program for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender seniors. The people in her program also have a very different reality from the one promoted by the gay media.
We've got two lunch programs. One is a program that actually provides the seniors with hot food. And the other program is a brown bag program that it used to have a hot meal. We lost our funding on that one. Part of that lunch, when it was a hot lunch, was a discussion. They talked about food, primarily where to find food. Some of them survived on the streets for many years. Many of our seniors' careers were busted because they were LGBT. So they've worked menial jobs all their lives, and their self-image was shattered. It's heartbreaking, but yet they have these souls and hearts that just never gave up. They continued to survive.
For some, even the words gay and lesbian have come to mean only upscale homosexuals who want to assimilate into heterosexual society.
I think I identify as queer.
I'm a faggot.
I actually identify as a dyke because when I was coming up, dyke was a class differential. And the lesbians all seemed to be upper class women and the dykes were my people.
But for some, being in the gay community may provide a certain social advantage.
I'm Dean Ouellette, part of the privileged poor. I don't know if this is something special to the gay community or not, but I think we have different connections with other people so that, for instance, the place where I live now is a result of friendships I made through a relationship. You know, my computer came from an ex-boyfriend. People, I don't know, maybe they just give a little more leeway to other gay people. You know, a friend of mine had gotten tickets to go fly to some city, someplace. And, you know people who will do stuff for you, favors for you. Even though I don't make a lot of money, I mean, I can't believe how little I do make, but I still enjoy, you know, my life.
Dean Ouellette moved to San Francisco just as the first Simmons study was being reported in the press.
I worked for a horrible legal copy service. Then I found out what a lot of what I was doing, what it actually ended up contributing to. A lot of it was getting records to try and rip people out of workers' comp cases. At one point, we had a meeting and they passed a new rule. We had to say what we had to write down everything we did and what time we started and what time we finished. I had quit that right before the earthquake, and it was a good thing because I might have been killed. They moved us into a building that was not safe, and part of it collapsed, and people did die. And the corner where the two walls fell was right where my desk was. After that, it's like, okay, if I'm going to work in a job, I have to know what the outcome is, and I have to feel good about what my effort goes into, so I decided on farming or prostitution.
And
I went into prostitution. I mean, I worked as an escort. I started out on the street, though, right here in the city on Polk Street. And in my mind, I thought this is a very simple, basic transaction. I'm trading off a service for cash, and that's it. It's not getting people to spend money on something they don't need. I did the prostitution thing for at least a dozen years. During that time, sometimes I would supplement my income with other jobs. I worked at a health food store. I did house cleaning.
10 years after the first Wall Street Journal story broke, economist Lee Badgett published some research of her own.
I started off studying race and gender discrimination, but in the early 90s got very interested in studying sexual orientation discrimination, mainly because I was hearing a lot about how affluent gay people were. And that was something that just didn't ring true to me. It wasn't true of the lesbians and gay men that I knew. It didn't make sense in the context of discrimination, because usually discrimination is something that reduces people's incomes, not increases it.
Using data from the census and government health studies, Badgett turned up some surprising information.
What I found was that this idea that gay people were particularly well-off, an economic elite in our society, was completely wrong. When I compared gay men, for instance, to heterosexual men, who look very similar in terms of how old they are, their education, where they live, their race. Actually, gay men end up earning less than heterosexual men do, quite a bit less in some studies. We find anywhere from 10 to 25, 30% lower earnings for gay men compared to straight men with the same kind of characteristics. The picture is more complex for women when you look at lesbians and compare them to heterosexual women. Actually, they, and many studies, turn out to earn more than the heterosexual women do. Now, that's not a real high standard, though, I have to point out, because actually heterosexual women are at the bottom. Straight men earn more than everybody. Gay men earn more than lesbians or straight women. And then we have lesbians, and then we have heterosexual women. Lesbians earn more, I think, because they know they're never going to be partnered with a man whose earnings will pull up their standard of living. So they get more education. They work more hours. They work more of the year than heterosexual women do, are a little less likely to have kids, which helps them a little bit. They are more likely to be in jobs that are male-dominated in our society. Having more men in jobs usually means that they're better paying. And then if you look at it in a more complex way, which I've done with some colleagues in one study, it's really just the white lesbians who are better off. Lesbians earning more ought to mean that they're less likely to be poor. But because for at least part of the study, we're looking at couples, lesbian couples are going to be at the low end anyway, even though they may be doing better than heterosexual women. Put a straight woman and a straight man together in a couple, and that couple will always do better than the two women in a couple.
The 1989 data reported by Rivendell, which have been updated numerous times with the same results, have enormous staying power. It's not unusual to find them quoted in newspapers or on television even today. A host of products have been created for the affluent gay market, from cruises to vodka.
Like-minded women.
Lesbians.
You really feel safe.
Where didn't we go?
The Mexican Riviera.
Greece. St. Martin.
Africa. The most amazing beaches. Katie
Lang. Melissa Etheridge, the Indigo Girls.
Experience more at Olivia.com.
In 2006, Barbary Management Group began construction on Barbary Lane Communities at the former Lake Merritt Hotel in Oakland. The name was taken from the popular Tales of the City series by San Francisco author Armistead Maupin.
This tile is gorgeous.
Isn't it gorgeous? The tile that she got was imported from Italy.
This closet is bigger than my closets at home.
This closet's bigger than my bedroom. No, not really.
Tim Johnson was hired as the life experience coordinator at Barbary Lane.
Barbary Lane Senior Communities was formed as an LGBT-friendly community, and the idea was to make this the flagship and then open up 5 other communities in California.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
We were at Gay Pride last year, and we had a booth, and I was amazed at how many people knew about it, and we weren't even open. In September, with the downturn of the economy, Barbary Management Group lost its funding. And the investment bankers decided to pull their money out of real estate and put it back into tech. So the president of Barbary Management Group, Dave Latina, basically did everything he could for the following 5 months to try to get bodies in here.
Does the fact that Barbary Lane couldn't attract enough tenants to stay in business prove that the gay market is not as deep a pocket as people think? Tim Johnson doesn't think so.
I think the economy has frightened people to the extent that they don't want to give up their homes. They don't want to move into an independent community. People aren't leaving their homes unless they're forced to by joining an assisted living community or a skilled nursing facility.
The residences at the Lake Merritt Hotel still hopes to make it as an LGBT-friendly senior community. When I visited there, only 2 of the 44 apartments were rented to seniors, with 2 more expected in the next month.
We have studios and 1 bedrooms. No 2 apartments are completely identical. Some have bigger closets, some have a bigger living room area. They start at $33.95 a month. That includes your meals. We have transportation services. We have a spa downstairs that you can use the soaking tub in. Full concierge. One of our residents is going on a vacation and he's going to meet his sister in Australia and then they're going to China together and he's coming back. So he had no idea how to book this. He didn't want to go through a travel agent. So our concierge did the whole thing for him. Especially if you don't have family, we want to step in and be that family. Make sure you get to your doctor's appointments.
Rollo T. Ampu also lives in a hotel, a single room occupancy in San Francisco's Mission District.
Here you are in my room, such as it is. This room is, I would say, approximately 10 feet by 14 feet. And there's a shared kitchen and shared bathrooms. And I bought an IKEA loft bed to create a bunch of space. So I use the extra space to cram in a bunch of musical equipment. And I don't have a couch. I can't fit one. I'd like to have one. It's file cabinets. Well, there's one file cabinet over there. You can't see it. It's books. And there's lots of writing all over my wall. I was told I couldn't write on my walls, which is what I wanted to do. And so the compromise I came up with is getting a bunch of butcher paper and then writing on the butcher paper. And so I write wraps on the butcher paper and I tape them to the walls. I have just other sort of random things. I try not to be too clutter some.
For gay people who don't fit the mold of white, middle or upper middle class professionals, the gay community, especially in an expensive city like San Francisco, can feel like a foreign country.
When I first moved to San Francisco, the class element of at least a lot of fag and gay male culture was very clear. It seemed to be hyper-materialistic when I first encountered it, and it was interesting because one of the things that happened when I was dating this boy was I had just lost my job at a bookstore and was really sad because I thought I was really unconfident. But they were telling me, no, you know more about computers than a lot of people I know, so you can just get a temp job. And so I ended up getting a really well-paying temp job as an administrative assistant at a financial advisory in the financial district. So sort of creating that sort of economic stability was part of our relationship.
I did what I wanted to do, which wasn't a way to make money. I mean, as a therapist, I was making good money. But I was sick of being a therapist. I didn't like the politics. I wanted to do something that fit more with what I thought was going on in the world. And in the process, I managed to get rid of all my money at just the time when inflation was suddenly jumping. And also, I was not well. One of my roles now is working the system. I don't know if you have any idea how many phone calls and how many menu trees it takes to stay on Medi-Cal.
Gay seniors like Polly Taylor, whom you just heard, are twice invisible. Within the gay community because of ageism, and in agencies that serve seniors because of homophobia. Yet few options exist for lesbian and gay seniors who cannot afford to live in a place like the residences at Lake Merritt.
So when you were doing your booth at Pride, did anyone come up to you and say, that sounds great, but I wouldn't be able to afford it?
Yes. I find that just because you're in the LGBT community, it doesn't make you rich. I've toured many facilities in the area that are independent and skilled. Our monthly is cheapest or right with some of the lowest ones. If you're a low income senior, whether you're LGBT or not, I'm worried for myself. What's going to happen when I retire?
Do you think if you work here for like 30 years, then when you
then maybe they'll grandfather me in? Yeah.
Seth Kilborn is executive director of Open House, a San Francisco agency helping to create affordable housing for low-income LGBT seniors.
Open House is building 88 units of affordable housing that will be welcoming to and inclusive of LGBT seniors at 55 Laguna Street. Affordable housing means that the residents of the building will earn anywhere between 20% and 50% of what is known as the area median income. In the meantime, because it's going to take us 2 or 3 years to actually get the building constructed, we get calls almost every day from an LGBT senior who is looking for some sort of housing or support services. And San Francisco does not have enough of affordable housing. The city is very expensive to live in. And what we are trying to do is build an inventory of affordable housing that exists in San Francisco, determine what criteria those housing facilities require, determine what kind of amenities they may offer, determine whether or not they are actually friendly and welcoming to LGBT seniors, and make that directory available to people who are looking for housing. The reality is there is not enough affordable housing to go around. I think the myth of gay affluence has definitely impacted the way society generally and social service providers view the LGBT community. And so a lot of the work that Open House has done over the last 10 years has been to educate and persuade and advocate and debunk that myth, because it has created a sense that social service providers don't need to really worry about them because they can take care of themselves.
Both Lee Badgett and Seth Kilborn believe that marriage rights would help to eliminate some of the poverty among gay and lesbian people.
In fact, there are some real economic challenges that LGBT people, particularly LGBT seniors, face because we don't have, because of federal law, Social Security survivor benefits. We don't have veterans benefits. We don't have some of the things that non-LGBT seniors can count on in their older years.
But other queer activists feel that our strength is in building communities as an alternative to couples.
Through domestic partnership, I actually have health care. I hadn't had health care before, since I was thrown out of the Navy. But health care is a human right. People have a right not to die in the streets because they can't afford to go to a hospital. And by that, I mean people, not couples. Couples aren't people. Couples are a legal entity that was made up.
Daniel and Rollo are both involved in activism that challenges the assumption that gay people are or want to be middle class. Daniel is in a collective called Le Gay, Queer Insurrection.
Way back in the, I guess it was the mid-90s, we decided to bring housing issues into the queer community. So what we did was we took over some muni kiosks where people wait for the bus and remade them into homeless shelters. We brought in furniture and we brought in decorations and we brought in a television. One of the reasons we chose a muni kiosk was because the then new design of the benches made it impossible for people to sleep on them. Before, they were, you know, a typical bench where you could sit down or lay down. We called that Homes for Homos, Habitat for Homonity. You know, all of these restaurants and establishments have signs that say restrooms are for customers only, and so somebody made up stickers that said all others piss in the doorway. It was pretty cool.
Rollo helped to found Gay Shame, which began as an alternative space to the San Francisco Pride celebration. Gay Shame and Le Gay have recently been organizing support for 4 imprisoned African-American women known as the New Jersey Four.
You know, these people got charged with attacking this person, you know, while they're attempting to go to the queer part of New York City, try to go to the piers, and they're like in sort of a neighborhood where there's an increased tendency to sort of criminalize people of color. And that definitely plays out in the ways that they were sentenced and the way that the police responded to them as like being a very dangerous criminal threat. One of the people had a knife and got charged with stabbing this person who started the whole incident. And the reason why she had a knife is because she worked night shift at Walmart. Definitely class and definitely like wealth and like what they had played out in different ways in terms of their trial and sentencing, because, you know, they weren't able to garner as much attention because they were poor. They weren't able to get, like, you know, the best, most expensive attorneys and stuff.
Daniel feels the invisibility of working class and poor queer people helps to define a political agenda which further excludes people who do not have money.
People who hold prominence in whatever the queer community is have a lot of money, and they're trying to gain legitimacy through molding the working class so that it's prettier and not as dirty. That manifests itself in things like the push to get queers legalized in the military. On the one hand, queer people should not be disallowed from entering any institution. At the same time, those people who are making that push will never actually have to be in the position of having to choose to be in the military, because they're never going to be hungry.
Not everyone agrees. In our society, wealthy people are admired. So perhaps the depiction of lesbian and gay people as a desirable market ends up helping all of us.
Marketing to the gay community might be a good thing in a larger cultural sense if it you know, sort of normalizes being gay, if it desensitizes people to images of gay men and lesbians. I think those are probably good things.
The Cosby Show did not prevent the levees in the Ninth Ward from breaking.
A lot of it reminds me of when I was a kid and there wasn't anything at all. And at least now, while it's totally flawed, a lot of it reminds me of, like, the gays are the new minstrels now in popular culture. But maybe that is where we have to pass through that to break a lot of that ignorance that people have, and also break what I have as this thing called the not good enough syndrome. I just grew up assuming gay was not as good as straight. Maybe I'm cynical and maybe I'm wrong, but I really feel it's corporations are just out for a bottom line, and they see this as another straw they can stick into and suck out more money. On the other hand, it does allow for events to go on, for a center to be there where people can come and do stuff that has nothing to do with these corporations. So until the community looks at itself as, you know, we can take care of our own, if we all pull together, we're going to rely on these outside sources.
Love it or hate it, for now, corporations and the gay community are one marriage that seems to be going strong.
Com says GM's Saab line is now number one with both gay men and lesbian women.
We certainly are hoping that our LGBT outreach will continue to pay dividends.
This program was produced for Queer Radical Voices with support from the Estrella Foundation and KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. Thanks to Adrian Lobe, Michael Reagan, Lisa Detmer, Mary Simon, Rivian Berlin, and Claire Schoen for their help. For Queer Radical Voices, I'm Kate Raphael.